welcome in to Pass the Mic. I am the proud host of season two, Peggy Kaczynski. And boy, if you look at the open, I've been through a couple of hairstyles, haven't I, throughout my career. Well, now you guys get me at one of the best times of my career. And that's when I get to do the things that I really want to do. And hosting Pass the Mic is one of them. Here on the show, if you're a fan, we just want you to pass it on and let people know that you're a fan of the show. Let us know by giving us the thumbs up, press that button. And also on your YouTube pages, please subscribe. Tell your friends about it as well. And don't be afraid to share with everyone. You can listen to last year's episodes as well. We have some great ones that are very interesting, hosted by John Buffone and Alyssa Barbieri on the Barroom Network. And if you're new to the show, we should probably give you a little bit of background. So Pass the Mic was created with a very simple yet important goal, and that is featuring women in sports and sports media. Now, often we'd like to highlight their successes, but sometimes we also have to show their struggles along the way as well. And we do it through open and honest discussion, hoping that we can impact many of you women and men in and maybe not in sports. Our guests come from all over. They are not just Chicago, where I am based out of, but they are nationwide and sometimes even all over the world, from veterans in their industry, actually to newbies who are just getting started. You know what we have found on Pass the Mic? That everyone has a story. So this week, our guest is a woman whom I actually met, boy, when her husband was in broadcasting. Yep. He was covering the Chicago Bears uniquely. He switched gears and then became a Chicago Bears assistant coach. That was not what drew me to this amazing woman. It was her own athletic background as a collegiate basketball player, and she went on to be a professional basketball coach as well. Stephanie Rivera joins us now. Stephanie, welcome to Pass the Mic. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me. I haven't seen you forever, girl.
Forever. I know. It's like, and I actually was, you know, actually in Chicago over the weekend to visit some friends and stuff, but it was a quick trip, and now I'm back on the East Coast.
Oh my gosh, how crazy. So I started telling people how I met you when your husband, Ron, was a broadcaster, actually covering the Chicago Bears after he played linebacker for the Bears. Yes, folks, you figured it out by now. Stephanie is married to Ron Rivera, the head coach of the Washington football team of the NFL, former Chicago Bear linebacker. Stephanie, you're so much more than the wife of a coach. I want people to know all about you and why I think that you're so wonderful. Let's start with your own athletic career at Cal Berkeley. Point guard, you weren't a cherry picker like me, were you?
No. No. And I'm going to date myself, but I actually started my collegiate career with the men's basketball, and we didn't have a three-point line. So that's going to take you back if you kind of figure out how long it's been.
Oh, yeah.
But in the middle of my college career, we did switch balls, and then they finally added the three-point line. And so it's been a while, but when we were still in Chicago, we would go to the our health club and play pickup basketball all the time.
Well, speaking of pickup basketball, is that how you met your husband?
It actually is. Yeah, we joke about it all the time. If you ask him straight up, he'll say I was stalking him. I was working at basketball camp in the area close by. It wasn't at Cal yet, but it was a college close by. And I had a lot of friends that were from all over the United States. So we're talking, you know, they were from, actually one was from Notre Dame. Another one was from Eastern Illinois. Another one was Tennessee Chattanooga. So they're like, hey, it's our day off. Let's go check out your campus. I said, well, you know, nothing's really open in the summer, but I got plenty of places to eat. And since they're female athletes, they're like, yeah, let's go grab some food. So we go down there, and there's this place called Yogurt Park. And I mean, this is early 80s now. So the Midwest really didn't have yogurt places. No. Even that was not even heard of yet. So they were all into it. They got their big cups of yogurt with cookie crumbs and, you know, and everything, all the toppings. And Ron happened to be on the outside window and ordering, and he saw me and I saw him, and he came in, and I'd seen him around campus. I didn't know exactly who he was, you know, but I knew he's a football player because he's wearing all the football gear. So I had no idea who he was. I didn't know his name, didn't know his position. I just seen him around campus, and he came in, introduced himself. And I said, hey, one of the places I saw him was the gym. So I said, hey, can you get some guys to play pickup basketball? Because the following week I was working camp on Cal campus. And so I said, hey, you know, for us to have a good workout, we need to play against guys. So sure enough, that next week he showed up with a bunch of guys. We played pickup basketball for 3 days. And by the third day, he finally had the guts to ask me out.
Oh my gosh. Didn't your parents ever tell you not to date an athlete?
No, they're not at all. They never put any kind of restrictions on who I could date.
So you guys meet in college. He's a, you know, big man on campus, big stud, linebacker at Cal. You're a basketball player at Cal. I would think that's good, right? Because you both understand each other's schedules. You both understand, you know, the rigors of what's going on. At what point, though, he's going pro, and what were your plans?
Well, let's say we met in July, and we were engaged by December. So we just knew it was right. I mean, it was just the right fit, everything. I mean, our big date night was like making dinner and then going to bed early. We were exhausted as athletes. And So, I mean, I was probably the first girlfriend that he had that just like, hey, let's go out. Let's do this. Let's do that. We were both exhausted. So we're like, I mean, I knew exactly what he was going through. And I think that was helpful for him that, you know, he has someone in a relationship that gets it, that understands how tough it is.
Yeah. What were your aspirations? Did you have an opportunity to go pro?
Oh, no. For me, I mean, I hurt my knee too many times. And I was like, by the last year eligibility, I'm like, you know what? I hurt my knee again. I'm like, I'm done, you know? So I think but I still love the sport. So I think that's what got me into the thinking about the coaching side. And by the time I got to Chicago and Ron's playing, you know, kind of got a little bored. Just, you know, this was my new like experience of being a wife, you know, I was like,
right.
I'm always busy. And someone I met at the golf course, she was working behind the counter, and she's like, hey, I'm a college student, but we need, you know, I'm at a small college. Would you think about helping out? And I'm like, I don't need to be paid. I'd love to help out. I met the head coach. She's like, I'd love to help. And I'm like, that's how I started my career. I just started volunteering.
So when did you get to coach in the WNBA? How soon after you guys left college? When were you with the Mystics?
So the Mystics was after Ron also had retired. And so he was actually starting his career in coaching too. And it's funny, it's like we basically both lost our jobs the same week.
Oh my god.
And like the ABL league in Chicago went out of business, and Ron got fired with the Wonstadt crew. And so we were both unemployed coaches.
Yeah, that's not easy to do. Was there ever a point that you felt like you were stifled in your aspirations, you know, being married to someone who was a player? Did you ever feel that you were held back at all?
No, definitely not held back. Ron was like, you know, take all these opportunities, go for it, do what you wanted, you know, and that's why when we moved out to he got the opportunity to coach with Andy Reid's staff in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And I was still going back and forth. Every year I would go to the women's Final Four. That's the coaches convention. And so I would go. And 1 year I went up. And now that we're on we're in Philly, it was just a train ride down to Washington. So I talked to the head coach. It was Nancy Darsh at the time. And I met her at the women's Final Four. And I said, hey, would you have any interns or, you know, like volunteers during training camp, which is, you know, starts in April, May, you know? And she goes, yeah, we accept, you know, I'll let you come and help out. And so I did, I helped out, and the year was 2000, and I helped out. And then the assistant coach got promoted to front office job. And since I was there, she offered me the job as an assistant. since I'd been working all through training camp with them. And I had to check with Ron. I said, hey, you're going to have to be a dad all summer now, because, I mean, a WNBA season is, you know, during the summer. And we did have some help. We had my parents around close by. And so he's like, yeah, okay, yeah, go for it. And so I did. I moved down to Washington and had an apartment. And it was basically, you know, me being living in Arlington and going to the gym and going back and forth. And that was my summer of 2000, was working with the Mystics and flying all over the country with the team.
So many women ask me, you know, especially young girls, and I'm always a little bit surprised that it's still a topic today. But I guess, you know, as long as we're women and as long as we're moms and wives, yes, and we have aspirations of a career as well, you know, they ask, how did you juggle it all? How did you do it all? And, you know, what did you have to give up in order to juggle all of it? So let me ask you, you said you had help, your parents were there to help. But what do you feel like you missed out on, or what do you feel like you maybe had to give up?
Well, I mean, it takes a lot of time. It's hard to be a professional coach, or any coach, really, you know, I mean, because coaching is time consuming. It's more than, you know, you would say you can clock in a white collar job or whatever, and it says 9 to 5. I mean, coaching is always way beyond those 9 to 5 hours. That summer, it was really tough because my daughter actually said, you know, I missed you. And I really didn't like, you know, you being gone so much. And so for me, I'm like, I know I could coach at that level. But for me, I actually really enjoy working with kids or younger people. So I'm like, okay, I got to that level. I coached it. I know I could do it. But I think for my schedule and to still be a mom, it's better if I do. You know, when I went back, I didn't continue on with the Mystics. I said, well, you know what? I'm just going to go back, stay in Philly. And I actually did an AAU team. I took an AAU team from the Philadelphia area, took them to the next year. I took them to the Junior Olympics, things like that. So I stayed active. That's for me, as long as I stay active. And I think just being fulfilled by working with young people, that's all I needed. You know, Ron's salary covered us fine, you know, so I wasn't worried about adding to the, you know, in that respect. I didn't need to make, you know, as much money or more money than him. That wasn't ever an issue. It's just, I needed to at least have something for myself.
I love the fact that you turned it into, like, when I've had the same thing. I remember when I was covering the Bears, you know, I did it for 22, 23 years. And when my daughter was like 8 years old, she said, Mom, I really hate that you're gone. I don't like you being gone so much. And that was kind of the heartbreaking. I mean, I had two boys that obviously they didn't care, you know, that I was gone, but it was my daughter, the same thing. And, you know, I think that's kind of when you have to look at your priorities and you say, okay, I'm a mom first. I have to remember that. And then you find a way to still fulfill yourself in what you know you're good at. And the fact that you found that way by looking at AAU and turning your attention to youth programs, uh-huh, I think that it's just a great lesson for all young women that it doesn't mean you have to quit what you're doing. It just means sometimes you have to take a left turn and still feel your fulfillment.
Oh yeah, we always say you got to pivot. You know, you got to be you got to see the whole picture. And you know, for us, it's like, also I knew that, you know, me supporting Ron and the fact that he was such a good coach, I knew he would ascend. And so I had to be ready, like, you know, if he got that next opportunity, I got to be ready to move, pick up. I'm the person that packs up the house, you know, finds the new house, gets the kids in school, does whatever, you know. So I mean, when we got into coaching, one of the wives said, veteran wives told me, you know, my job is professional mover. So I'm like, wow, okay. You know, it's like, this is what I need to expect. But Ron also was in the military, so he had moved a lot, you know, so he was more concerned with our kids about moving. But I think, you know, for our kids, it's always, you know, we've said it's a new adventure, you know, And for kids now, the moving, they've got everything. I mean, we had to write letters. We had to put a postage stamp, and we couldn't call because it was long distance. So it was hard when you left your friends when you were little. Now they've got Skype, they got FaceTime, they got everything. So, it's their fault they miss them because they could talk to their friends every day.
You brought up the other wives and some of the other athletes' wives. Was it ever hard for you being a player's wife?
I don't think hard. I mean, it's definitely different being a player's wife and being a coach's wife. Because they as player's wives, you're just there supporting them, making sure that, everything they need. But there's always that what if, I'm not that person anymore in the team and that kind of stuff. It's like there's that uncertainty. And so you have to make sure that they're mentally always focused because there's such a short window for athletes, but on the coaching side, you're like, there's so many other factors in terms of when you're just an assistant, obviously you have your group that could do as well as they can. And then if other things happen, you just don't know. It's the waiting game of it's probably going to be the whole staff that lets go if you don't have team success. So, yeah. I mean, there's different pressures, at a certain point, as long as, you could tell your husband, you're doing the best you can with your group, but if other groups don't, we're still going to get fired, So
yeah,
it's like you can only, you just got to do the best as you can do, but we're also at the mercy of a lot of other factions.
So did you ever feel like you didn't fit in one group or the other, players' wives, or maybe as a coach's wife, you've got so many other things that you brought to the table as well. Was there ever a time when you felt like you didn't fit in?
No, I think what's really good. And it's, I think pretty much all teams do this. Veteran wives usually take care of the younger wives or girlfriends, whatever. And they, I had at the time, Terry Hampton took care of me and Brian Cabral's wife. They just, they kind of just said, hey, you're the, new person on the block. We're going to, bring you in and just invite you to everything and introduce you to everybody. And it's the same thing with coaches' wives. You have your staff and the head coach's wife usually takes the reins and says, hey, we're going to have this, that, so you can meet each other and here, work with each other and help each other out, things like that. So I think for me, I can't do that with the players' wives because Ron has, he's at that management level where, he's makes the decisions of whether you're on the team or not. So I can't get real tight with the players and their wives as like that. But with coaching staff, you have a different relationship. You definitely, because Ron brought them in. And so you try to make sure all the young, because we have Ron likes to have that nice mix. So we'll have some coaches' wives that have never been in the pros before. So you kind of help them through it. And everyone just steps up and helps each other.
So you were coaching before Ron was coaching. So sure. What do you think he learned from you as a coach?
I think he's still learning from me because I offer different perspectives for him. When he sees something and he's working with guys and he's like, okay, a player, I'm just not having, I can't get through to him and this, and I'm like, well, have you thought of that? Maybe this is the issue or something, or have you guys, so I just kind of throw things at him because, sometimes guys do it one certain way, they're just very focused but I just give a different perspective that maybe he hadn't thought of.
I love it. It's hard for me to think that, I mean, folks, look at her. She's so positive. She's smiling all the time. But we all know that there's always tough times. And Stephanie, man, she's been through some tough times. So before we get into, Ron's health and, the family tragedy you guys had with your house a few years back, I wanted to ask you, as a woman, did you ever feel at all that you were discriminated against or, maybe as a minority in any way? Did you ever feel discriminated against?
Oh, all the time. Oh,
it's really?
Like, oh, I mean, you know, And the thing is, it's so funny because Ron and I have these discussions about things like that. I mean, just being a female athlete and being a woman of color, you know, it's like being an Asian American. I mean, I've walked in places and people have looked at me, you know, and a little bit, you know, and I'm like, you feel it, but you just kind of let it roll off, you know, unless it's so, you know, outlandish, the interaction, then you might. I've never had that where I had to have, you know, I've had to call somebody out on, you know, why are you treating me this way? But you feel it, the looks, maybe some comments. The worst is, and I say this all the time to Ron, is when I play golf, I go, I don't know how many times I've outdriven a guy and they're like, oh, you need to pee in a cup. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to let that roll off. But you are a very insecure guy because I just outdrove you by 20 yards. You know, I mean, really, so if you think about it, that's pretty sexist, right?
Right. It is. Well, now you're making me feel bad because I say that to my own girlfriends.
But women are on a different level. I mean, for a guy to say that to a woman, it's like, yes. You know, dude, really? You know, that's, and I never, I mean, that's the thing. People go, you know, how'd you play? I say, I played pretty good. And then, you know, and I might've played with a bunch of guys and we walk into a room and I played with the guys and they're like, how'd you play? I'm like, pretty good. I never say I beat the guys. I will never walk into, you know, like if we come into the 18th hole after the 18th hole and we're all having drinks, I never tell anyone that. I let the guys say, yeah, she kicked our ass, like, you know,
yeah,
but I will never do that. And I just, you know, cause you just not, don't know how guys are going to react. So I never do that to anybody like that. And I let them say it themselves.
Do you think, well, first of all, before I go to this next question, I have to ask you, what's your index now as a golfer?
4.7.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Why didn't I invite you to our member guest? I mean, what the heck?
You have my number.
I know. I'm going to invite you from now on. This is crazy. So what I was going to ask you is, because of, you know, the discrimination that you have felt, do you think it makes you a better mother?
Yes, because I think I make sure my kids understand, you know, what they might be, some issues that might come up. You know, my daughter and I, you know, if we watch a program that talks about issues, we have good discussions about that, you know. And for Ron, I mean, that's why, you know, gender equity is a huge thing for us. And Ron and I have looked at, you know, our own university. And that's why we got behind a lot of programs. And we're saying, how are we going to give back? We decided, you know, we've already established a Ron Rivera linebacker scholarship, right? We help out with basketball. We buy season tickets. We do those things, but they have a budget commensurate with the men. But there are a lot of other sports, like women's softball. They've at Cal. They've had a stadium that I would think is high school level. It is not what a Division I school should have. And they've been asking and fighting for a new stadium. And so, another alum said that they would, you know, help match our gift. And so we were able to get this softball stadium off the ground, and it's going to be named the Rivera Family Softball Field.
Wow. And didn't Ron has a woman assistant coach on his staff in Washington, doesn't he?
He does. Jennifer King. Yeah. Yeah.
Were you behind that?
Well, actually let's see, 2016 at the NFL owners meetings, you've probably been to a few of those in the past. Yeah. They have guest speakers for us. And so one of the breakout seminars for some of the wives, coaches' wives and owners' wives, was about some of the programs that they're going to implement. And one of the speakers was Sam Rappaport, and she was hired to, look at diversity and gender equity issues in the NFL. And so, of course, me, I always raise my hand in these things. And she was asking, you know, do you think we can get coaches to hire women coaches? And I'm like, if they're qualified, but we've got to give them the chance to be qualified. And I said, for me, you know, for as basketball, I'll go to a game, you know, we'll go to a WNBA game, an NBA game, and Ron and I watch it differently because I'm watching it as a coach. And so I said, if you can, and also as a former player, right? So I see things that, you know, just like he as a coach and a football player sees things on a football field that I can't see. So I said, you probably should, if you're looking for a female coach, I know there are these women football leagues. That's where you should find your first pool of women who actually have played the game a little bit and want to, you know, continue on. I said, because they do have that perspective. They don't have to be top, you know, you don't have to be top tier. I mean, you see people that have not played Division I are coaches in the NFL. I think you just at some point have to be, you know, understand the game by being on the field. So then you could learn the X's and O's, but you have to be a good teacher at some point. And so Sam did was she actually was able to get their, whatever the league was, the women's football league that they had going on at the time, they had like a big, the NFL sponsored them, and they came to the Disney where they were doing the Pro Bowls, and they had this big kind of tournament for them. And so the gals that they had figured out were interested in coaching, after they were done playing some of these games, they brought them in, and there might have been maybe 50, 75 women in the audience. And then they broke them out and into round tables with, I think it was the owner from the Buffalo Bills, myself, Ron, a few other. Oh, Scott Pioli, he was at that first one, and they had this great breakout session, and then Ron talked, I talked, and we gave them a lot of ideas on how to get themselves an opportunity to at least be an intern, you know, during training camp, things like that. And they did. So I know McDermott had some of these gals in there, and Bruce Arians huge about giving women opportunities. Ron had Jennifer as an intern for training camp. And she kept plugging away, and he kept seeing her improve and get more comfortable teaching what she knew, and also giving her more assignments. And, you know, it's just getting the opportunity, getting your foot in the door.
I love it because the Bears now just hired their first woman in the scouting department. So to see them move into the football operations is so huge. So it's really fabulous.
And that's the thing with scouting, you just as a scout need to, I mean, I could look at a kid, watch them run around like, well, that's a Division I athlete right there. You know what I mean? I mean, just by watching a kid, I could see who can be at what level. But then, you know, you got to get in their head, and that's when you talk to them and see now how good a player, how high can they get is the mental part. But just to see if an athlete has what it takes, women are just as good at evaluating that as men. Okay. And then if you have a good relationship with your coaching staff as a scout, you just need to understand what the coaches want, what they're looking for to run their systems. And so, you know, those are the things that, you know, to evaluate and to write up and to say, he's good. He's got, you know, he's got good hips. He had bad hips. His hands are, you know, he tends to, you know, catch things to his body versus catches things with his hands, but he's got great speed. You know, I've talked to their, you know, if you're a good scout, you talk to their coaches, you find out how the kid studies. That's all the information that the coaches want to be able to help evaluate them.
I love it. So I mentioned, folks, that Stephanie has, you know, overcome some hardships as well. A couple of years ago, their house burned down in a horrible tragedy.
It all began here in the fireplace. Started in the walls, went up, went into the ceiling above the master suite, and went all the way up to the attic. Within about 6-7 minutes, the fire department showed up, and they came charging into the house. And you talk about teamwork. It was phenomenal. It was tremendous how poised they were. And it's one of the things as a coach, you always talk to your players about handling the situation, maintaining your composure.
You know, you see fires and there's a total loss. But here they had a chance because they were there right as the fire started that they could get into our house and start to save things for us.
Last year, I think it's a year ago this month or last month, Ron Rivera was diagnosed with cancer. So, Stephanie, you're so positive. You're such an uplifting personality. What is it that has gotten you through those really tough times?
Well, the fire, I mean, I told Ron, I said, you know, no one got hurt. So, I mean, I think I probably would have been a basket case if something happened to my dogs or anybody, you know, but the fact that it was just the house, it was stuff, you know, when you break it down, it's in the end, it's just stuff. And so we were all safe and, you know, it's just one of the things you got to deal with now, you know, getting it fixed and doing all that. But again, you just got to pivot. You got to be able to see the goal, get everything taken care of. And then, you know, and then being in Charlotte was awesome because they were so determined to get us back in the house. The fire happened in January and they were just wanted to get us back in the house when the season started. The insurance adjuster didn't think we'd get in for 10 months because of how much work had to be done, but we were very fortunate. They really helped. You know, they were working and the neighbors were great. And, you know, we threw a party for them after. We're like, thank you for, you know, you had workers in your, you know, blocking the streets every day for 7 months. And they got us in before the season started.
And then you deal with Ron's cancer last year. That had to be very difficult as a family. What was your role at that point in helping him through it?
The biggest thing was, I think, that was I was able to deal with the cancer with because hearing that it was treatable and curable. You know, I've had so many friends. I mean, you've had so many. Everybody's had somebody touched by cancer. We've had some that didn't make it, and we've had a ton that have made it. So that those that have made it was, you know, I just needed to hear that Ron could survive this. And once they told me he could, I'm like, let's go. That's it. Whatever path the doctors say we have to take, that's what we're doing. Mm. And I'm usually misinformation. I Google, you know, everything. Yeah. We did not Google a darn thing, nothing. And the doctors just said, we will tell you what you need to do. So we said, that's it. We're going to listen to you. We're not going to look at anything.
Wow.
Well, Ron's going to be very up front. Every time he feels something or, you know, notices something, he's going to tell you. And they're like, that's all we need. Just communicate to us and we will communicate to you. And they kind of laid it out. You're going to feel like this during week one, week two. Week three, you might start feeling this. Week four, you know, they knew exactly how patients are going to feel for the whole 7 weeks of his. And so we just had to like follow that and just, my job was to feed him. He asked to eat. He cannot lose weight. And it's hard because the treatment, his throat, it hurts. There's sores in there. There's, you know, the muscles are atrophying. I mean, you know, all these things and nothing tastes good, you know, because you lose your taste buds. And so that was my job, though. So sneaking the protein powder, the shakes, everything. I mean, I did everything I could. And I gave some of that protein gunk to the chef at the facility. I'm like, spike his shakes. You know, you got to get calories in them, you know. And that's what we had to do. And Ron's very good. I mean, he was very good about telling the doctors how he felt. And if he forgot something, we were right there because being in COVID, it was either myself or my daughter taking him to the hospital every day, every morning for treatment. Oh, and so we were both, again, I was in the protocol. My daughter worked for the team. But so I was getting COVID tested every day right along with the team. And it was crazy. Wow. But yeah, we got through it.
Well, let me just tell you, talking to you for the past 30 minutes, you are such an example of the things we all learned as athletes, being able to apply them the rest of your life and no matter what you face, you know, whether it's getting your kids up and packing and moving to a new city, you know, your husband getting fired, you know, you deciding to move on to go coach in Washington, and you're pivoting constantly, but you're using so much of what you learned as an athlete. And it's really good to know that what we teach our kids and why sports is so good for them really does help you throughout anything the rest of your life.
Well, personally, it's the time management, obviously, and it's seeing, setting goals and working around things, and things don't always go your way. You have disappointment. There's failure along the way, but you can't let it get you down because you know what the ultimate goal is. And I think that, again, successful athletes are able to think that way. And I think, for the athletes that want to get out in the work world too, it's like, the teamwork aspect. I mean, I know a lot of people that own businesses, they love athletes because they know that it's not just them. It's not the me, especially those team athletes, because they're like, they want everybody, they have that team mentality still. And so they'll do whatever they have to do to get that project done, to help make those numbers, to do what they have to do to help everyone be successful. So I think,
Rivera, is great. You're amazing, Van. You are such a great role model for women, whether it's as an athlete, as a mother, as a wife. Very proud of you. And I really wanted people to get to know you a little bit better by seeing all the things you've done in your life and just what a great woman you are. So thank you for taking the time to join us on Pass the Mic.
Well, this is awesome. I'm glad you have some, you've got this gig going on for yourself, which is awesome too.
Got it. Listen, I'm in my basement. I'm in the man cave, actually. So, I had to take over the man cave just so that I could pivot my career. When I walked away from doing it every day, I still wanted to do something. And just like you said, you got to find a way to do it that works with your family. And, we all pivot in life.
Exactly. And I'm noticing those Emmys back there. So I'm like, pretty impressive. Nice cardigan. Very impressive. I know
Thank
what it takes.
Stephanie. To things. That's, Thank
that's,
you.
You are an accomplished person too. So that's awesome.
Well, thank you again. Give our best to Ron, and it's great having you on Pass the Mic.
Well, and much success for Pass the Mic for all your future interviewees.
Great. Thank you, everybody. And thank you, Stephanie. We'll be right back with the mic drop after this.
Really understanding the difference between empowerment and agency versus objectification. And the difference is always who has the power. If I choose that I feel my best and I look my best and I'm the most confident in a certain outfit, then I am empowering myself to make that choice and to tell you that I'll show you who I am and let you know who I am. You can't make those decisions based off what I'm wearing. But if it's objectification because the producers or directors or whoever runs a show is saying you have to wear a dress every show and high heels have to be this high, and you have to dye your hair blonde, it's a very different thing, right? So right. I do think we have to remember that, because a lot of people will look at women who are stepping into their own sexuality and accuse them of not being also allowed to talk about harassment and other things. They're very different things. It's about choice and power.
Now to the mic drop. I just have to point out how much I loved what Stephanie Rivera had to say, not only about gender equity and how she stands up very much in the background, not in the foreground, but really uses her voice to help women get in the NFL. The fact that she did this at the owners' meetings and helped them organize a program for women who wanted to become football coaches, maybe just an internship, she rolled up her sleeves and got right in there and did that. I'm so impressed with that. I was surprised, but I guess I shouldn't have been surprised to hear her talk about the discrimination that she has faced, not only as a woman of color, as a mother with her children. Ron is Hispanic and Stephanie is Filipino. And as a woman, how she tries to pass on the things that she has learned to her children, and also when she can recognize discrimination at its worst. But Stephanie is upbeat, and as you noticed, she uses everything she ever learned as a player and as a coach to overcome and to still be successful later on in life. And I think that that is just a really fabulous lesson that we all should learn. So if you like this episode, folks, please click the thumbs up and then go back and might as well just listen to some of the other episodes. Watch the episodes. They're awesome. You can follow me on Twitter at Peggy Kaczynski or Facebook, Peggy Kaczynski, NBC Chicago, and on the gram at NBC Peggy. Now, this is not the only show that I host. There's also our podcast. I say our because I host it with my son, Chicago's sportscaster and her son. It is also here on YouTube, on the Barroom Network, on Podbean, or wherever you might get your audio for podcasts. Check it out. Don't forget to subscribe to both shows while you're at it. I want to thank our producer, Aldo Gandia, for everything he has done, bringing me in to the show for season two. I am loving every minute of it, and I hope you guys are too. I look forward to introducing you guys to women in sports and sports media that you just might be motivated by as well. I want to thank you all for watching. We'll see you next time on Pass the Mic.